Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of The Tap. I am your host, author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin DeFrancisco. What do we got on tap for today, Andrew?
Today we have NXT 2.0 and AEW Dynamite. Dynamite, great show.
Yeah, Dynamite. I mean, after that, after the opening match, you can't really...
I was really shocked that they wound up putting that first.
I know. That should have been the main event to me, hands down.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they were just trying to showcase the women a little bit more because they're trying to get beat for that.
They're trying to put the emphasis for the women's division, but also because now, from what I heard yesterday, is the new belt that they're going to introduce is not the Trios title. It's going to be the TBS title for the women's division.
Yeah, I had heard that I didn't know it was for the women's division, but I had heard something about basically the sister title to the TNT title.
Yep.
So yeah, that's interesting, because I thought I imagined that. I guess I listened to it in my news this morning and wasn't paying attention.
It's been all over since yesterday.
Yeah, so yeah, that's awesome. Actually, I think that's better because they don't have enough. They do have some women's tag teams, but I mean, they don't have like enough. Like, at least they're smart enough to know that they don't really have the depth in that, but they still should have like a mid-card title for the women. I think that's a good idea. It's new. I've never really seen anybody do a women's mid-card title, so that's very innovative.
I just hate the, like, I've gotten used to them saying the TNT title.
Yeah.
And it's kind of stupid and ridiculous to call it the TNT title, especially because next year they're going to be moving off of TNT and onto TBS. But at the same time, it's just like, why are you calling it the TBS title? Like, really?
Well, Dynamite's
really necessary to do that.
Well, Dynamite's staying on TNT. It's Rampage that's going to TBS.
I heard both of them are supposed next year.
No, I think Dynamite's supposed to be 2023, I think. They're not going until 2023.
Well, I know Rampage is supposed to get moved over next year.
Yes,
I thought it was later.
100%. That's,
I thought it was later next year. Not at the same time, but I heard later next year.
Maybe, Dynamite's, but I know that Rampage is definitely...
Yes.
Rampage is early next year. So I was thinking maybe they were going to do TBS title because Rampage...
I know, but it's still ridiculous.
It's going to be more women's oriented. Yeah, I understand. I get it.
It's a ridiculous name. That's
The TNT title also just kind of works because it just sounds cool. Like, Dynamite, get it?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, that's why that one's okay. You can keep that one, but and just because it doesn't matter anyway, they're both Turner, you know, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I agree. Like, TBS, it doesn't roll off the tongue quite like TNT, the TNT title.
No, it doesn't.
So yeah, I agree with that. Also, Ruby Soho coming in, they're trying to showcase her, you know, who's basically...
Well, here's my thing for this.
Yeah.
And we're gonna touch base on that part first.
Yeah.
Also, but they have a substantial women's division in terms of roster, like roster size. They have a substantial amount of women.
They have a really young women's division, though.
Right.
A lot of them.
They still have to work on it and be better.
Yeah.
But my point of everything is they have a long list of women that they could pull from at any given time.
Yeah,
you have one women's champion, but you have, and they usually carry the women's title for several months. I mean, Shida had the title for, what was that, like almost a year or just over a year?
Just over a year, actually.
Britt Baker has now had this title for 4 months.
Maybe even five now.
Yeah, I think it's been about five now, but... you know, and I mean, don't get me wrong, she's been a great champion.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily need her to drop the title,
yeah,
but someone like, you know, Ruby Soho coming in, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, great, you know, this is a great match. They want to go ahead and put like a jetpack on Ruby Soho, show like, you know, what WWE missed out on by releasing her,
exactly,
you know, and it they had her come up short in the match, not because she couldn't beat Britt Baker. It was because of outside interference causing her to lose. So it still gives Ruby Soho that momentum and be like, you couldn't beat me straight up. You know, I had you beat and you had two people get involved that caused you to win. So for someone like Ruby Soho, yes, having that secondary title in there would be great right now, because you can have, you can put the title on someone like her, have her build up that title. You know what I mean? You have like enough women's division where you can have credible contenders. You don't also necessarily need to have one women's champion for eight, 10 months, 12 months, whatever it is, and then them drop it off to somebody else. Meanwhile, you've beaten all these other people that could have been an incredible champion too.
Exactly. But yeah, I agree with you there. That also, like you said, like I am fine with Britt Baker keeping the title for a while though. So that's why it's great for them to introduce another title, because it gives people like Ruby Soho and Chris Statlander and, you know, the Bunny and, you know, whatever, people like that, a chance to vie for a title, you know, while Britt Baker is obviously like the top, you know, women's wrestler in the company at the moment, like the full package.
But I also feel like what they need to do also for this is they need to treat it like the way the Intercontinental title used to be like back in the day, where it's like, this is the stepping stone to become like the champion, the like women's champion. Like you having this title and having a credible reign as champion, cool, great, like it. But make it where then it's just like, okay, when they drop the belt, it's because they're going after that world title.
Yeah.
So right there, you already have your main event match now. Britt Baker had beaten Ruby Soho thanks to Jamie Hayter's interference.
Yeah.
I would say probably the two matches of the night that, in comparison to all the other matches that were on the card, were kind of like at par. Like they weren't bad. They were good matches still, but in comparison to like the other matches, it was just like, they're okay. MJF getting the win over Brian Pillman Jr.
Yeah. I feel like that was like kind of a lull kind of match comparatively after we had the Kenny Omega match.
Yeah. I mean, I expected it to be more explosive, more, you know, like really hard hitting. It was kind of like it was a match, and for MJF to be, I mean, technically it wasn't his direct hometown, but it was his home state.
Yeah.
You know,
they treat it that way. He was close enough to where he lived, because most people don't know what towns are on Long Island, but some people outside of New York don't even know what Long Island is. So,
but I mean, it was just kind of, I felt lackluster. It wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't too, and here's the thing. I think that they really should have had MJF. This is the way I kind of foresee it. They should have had MJF come out, and instead of going MJF and then here comes Brian Pillman, they should have had MJF get on the microphone and just really dog.
I was shocked.
They should have had him dog New York. They should have had him dog Brian Pillman Jr., man. Like, they should have really like done it. And then when Brian Pillman hit, like his music hit, you should have had him racing out to the ring to just wail on MJF.
Which he did anyway, but yes, they didn't have the promo.
Right,
yes.
But that's what I'm saying. Have that promo, because then it has all this heat. And now you have like that buildup of like, man, like we want to get MJF. Like, here comes Brian Pillman Jr. Let's cheer him on. Like, let's get him the win. You know, like get... That would have amped up the fans for Brian Pillman Jr. more. It would have amped up this match a bit more, because you would have had the fans really pulling for MJF to lose. And then have the way the way that it ended was a great, I liked the ending. You had Brian Pillman get like, he had like the win right in his sights, man. He goes for that springboard lariat, and right as he's about to land the lariat, MJF grabs his arm, turns it into the salt of the earth, And he's really cranking on that arm. And it made it believable where it's like Brian Pillman Jr. is like, he's trying so hard to like, you know, to stay in the match. And then he has to give it up because his arm. That would have been a great piece of storytelling if you had it with that intensity throughout the match, especially in the beginning, if you did that whole promo.
Well, listen, I feel the opposite on you. So I was the only one beforehand that thought that this match was going to be a boring snore fest because I had Brian Jr. about this match because I knew it was going to be, you know, nothing special to begin with. I mean, yeah, it was a great Brian Pillman Jr. match, but that doesn't say much to me. No offense, Brian Pillman Jr. I know I sound like I'm being very harsh on him, but I mean, everybody in AEW can't be a main eventer. I'm sorry. Like to give everyone that realization, but also that, yeah, I cannot believe that MJF did not talk in New York where he is from, because I felt like he was going to come out and say, this isn't Plainview, Long Island, New York. You want to know why I think he didn't? Because people, they were in New York and a lot of people in the city there were from Long Island. So, you know, they know how crappy Plainview, Long Island, New York is. So I feel like that's one of the reasons why, because yeah, they were going to crap all over. But it would have been great. I can't believe that, though, because they had him talk in New Jersey. I can't believe they didn't have him talk in New York.
Well, because here's the thing. He could have easily got booed. Yeah, he would have been booed. But yeah. Here's the thing. He didn't have to sit there and be like, you know, oh, I'm from Plainview, Long Island, where it's so much better than over here. He didn't even have to go that route. Because he could have easily turned around and been like, yeah, I'm from Plainview, but I couldn't wait to get out of New York, you know, he could have downplayed like New York and you know what I mean? And like really hyped up like, you know, the crowd to draw that heat. He could have done this and they dropped the ball with it. And yeah. And I'm not one to sit there. You know me, I'm never going to sit there and be like, oh my God, AEW is the greatest thing ever. They can't do anything wrong. I'm going to tell you the way it is.
Yeah.
And they dropped the ball with this. They had a great opportunity to draw more heel heat in his own hometown to amp up this match. And instead it just became a match.
All right. Yeah, I agree. I want to move on from it though. Cause so I feel like we spent too much time on it. This is the least probably important thing of like the show. So
the other match that I feel like it was, an okay match, it wasn't great, was FTR versus Sting and Darby.
I enjoyed this one more just because I didn't think the match itself was that great, but I enjoyed Sting showed me a lot more, and I've been the one that's been saying Sting can still go a little bit. A lot of people were like, oh yeah, smoke and mirrors on FTR making Sting look good and stuff. Okay, I don't care what you say. Sting jumping off the top rope over Darby Allin's head into a perfect crossbody is nobody's skill but his own. And that looked incredible, actually, for 50-something or 60-year-old Sting, however old he is, to, jump over Darby Allin off the top rope and actually make it look good. You know, you still got a chant from the crowd. You know, he showed me more like, because I was excited to see Sting, you know, it was a little bit of nostalgia, of course, but like, I know Sting's not, I don't have like, you know, blinders on. I know that Sting's not, you know, who he used to be, but.
No, but I mean, here's the thing is Sting, I agree. Sting could still go.
Yeah.
I just feel like it wasn't, again, it just kind of felt like it was a match.
I thought that Tully Blanchard was also actually supposed to like be in the match. No, or something.
It was only FTR versus Darby and Sting.
Okay.
Tully had nothing to do with it. It was what we had said that we wanted it to be that way.
I thought it was going to be. I thought that they were like alluding to the fact with Tully Blanchard's promo, like there was going to be a match in the future of some kind where it's going to be like a tag team or something. Him and Sean Spears versus... You never know.
I mean, that may be what they end up going to, but we'll see what happens, you know. The thing that I actually did like, I mean, obviously, the match
it was okay. Yeah, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. I get what you're saying. It was nothing special.
Like, it wasn't special, and especially when you compare it to the other matches that we see last night. Yeah. The thing that I actually thought was cool was FTR. their outfits were like a throwback to the black and white NWO. And I feel like this was twofold. I like the commentary about it because they're like, this is psychological warfare, because, you know, when Sting went to war for WCW, it was Sting versus the NWO, and, you know, trying to make Sting see like the NWO colors is trying to like get in his head. And I like that the commentary for that. And then I feel like for it also was like, because FTR and the New Day are friends.
Yeah.
And I feel like when it came to it, it's like they saw that the New Day did the red and black for the NWO like throwback. So it's just like FTR was just like, we want to do a throwback for the NWO too.
Yeah. Also, yeah, they put over like when Sting comes out that he's got the like war paint on, like he had like red painted under his eyes, kind of a little throwback, like older type Sting face paint look with like the little, triangles under his eyes and stuff. Like it looked really cool. I thought like that him and Darby had like the red sort of face paint over it. I mean, it probably not this, but it also made me think of when you said that that FTR's gear was like NWO, it made me think of Wolfpack Sting. With the red and black, it was all right. I enjoyed this match for what it was. I mean, but yeah, like you said, compared to the rest of the card, it was just okay.
Yeah.
I love JR actually on commentary tonight. Shivani's actually starting to get
Shivani,
to me a little.
Shivani was a little off.
Yeah, I think he's been off for a while because he's been doing a lot. Like he does like a lot of backstage interviews. He has to do the AEW Unrestricted podcast, and he hasn't been used to working in the wrestling business. Like he took 20 years off from like the wrestling business almost, you know, like, and it's kind of hard to pick that back up, especially when you're, you know, almost 20 years older, you know. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. I agree. Back to the action of things that were good that we really enjoyed. Malakai Black versus Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
I was very impressed. I was very happy with the outcome of this match. I liked the entrances. You had especially Malakai Black's. I mean, it just gets creepier and like more awesome looking on TV every single week.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I know you had said, you know, yes, you kind of broke, but you, it, broke, you, know, you on, broke the fourth wall on that one for us last
it
week.
It does look really great happens, on TV. But it does look, come on, we know like when the Undertaker does the thing when he appears in the ring that everybody sees him walking down to it. But I remember when I had that realization when somebody like videotaped it at WrestleMania back in like 2011 or something. And I was like, oh, you just ruined the mystique of the Undertaker for me, you know, like,
yeah, so. But then they wound up actually getting smart about it. And they always had like a little spotlight when it came to the Undertaker.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, now, but the, even like Cody Rhodes's entrance, I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Bringing Brandi Rhodes back out added like the additional element of like,
I feel like it made him feel heel, like
a little bit.
And I feel like Malakai's also been saying like he was saying to the crowd that they were the House of Black basically like the week before when I was there. You know, it kind of feels like, I mean, not yet because he's still doing underhanded things, but I feel like they're realizing that no matter what they do, that Cody is going to feel like the heel in this. No matter like even whether he thought he was supposed to be the babyface or not, I feel like now they're realizing that he kind of should be the heel. I really enjoyed the part about, you could talk about whatever the rest of the match, but the part that I really enjoyed about it was the beginning when, sort of towards the middle, Brandy, so Malakai does his signature where he's going to do like a suicide dive and then does the backflip off the ropes and then sits down. And I like how Brandy gets in there, sits down in front of him to distract him and then just gives him the finger, and you actually catch you know, like the end of her saying like F you, like yep. to him, which was great.
And giving them the fingers too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought was great. It was a great character work. I like Brandy already jumping right straight back into her previous role, which is where I always thought she was best, was being Cody's manager. I always thought that she's really good at that. Like, no offense to her. Like, she doesn't have to be like the best wrestler in the world. She's a great manager, I think, at least for Cody specifically, maybe not like the women that she was managing, like, you know, last year or whatever, but like, I like her with Cody. I like her in this role. Even, I'm sorry. Just the Arn Anderson thing. Did you know about like Arn Anderson, like actually falling the first time, like he like legitimately fell off the apron, like accidentally?
No, I didn't know about that part.
Okay, so you know how Cody hits him towards like the end of the match off the apron. Before that, he gets up like to distract like the referee or talk to the referee about something, or Cody, like to get him back into the match. And he realizes he's on the wrong side of the apron for the spot. So then he gingerly, slowly, it takes like a minute and a half for him to like get around the ring post. And he like almost falls off, and then like he's like up, and then all of a sudden you hear the crowd go, oh, and then like the camera didn't pan to it because it wasn't supposed to happen. And then the camera accidentally panned to it for a second because they thought maybe they missed it and it was part of the show, and it wasn't. And Arn Anderson just on the ground, like actually hurt, you know, and then he has to get back up for the spot that they have to do like 5 seconds later where he knocks him back off the apron again. So yeah, that's just a funny little thing for you. He's all right, but because he took the bump right after that, the actual bump. But yeah, he accidentally fell off the apron because he was on the wrong side. And then when he tried to do like the swing around, like they, you know, like the younger guys can do, you know, he was a little too big, and you know, he lost his balance and fell off.
Yeah, I definitely missed that part.
But you should go back and watch it. You'll see it. I'm sure they have it on like a highlight clip that's like a minute long, you know, like you could find it real quick on YouTube like after the show. I recommend you check it out because it's kind of funny, and it's also kind of it really kind of adds to because at first the crowd's like concerned, they're like, oh well, that's a botch right there, but then afterwards when he still pushes Cody, it like gets his like respect back, like with the crowd. So that was kind of cool.
So here was my thing with it, and I actually kind of agree with one of the guys that I follow on Instagram. They have a thing where they said, I want Cody to get his head kicked so hard that he forgets that he's supposed to be a face and goes back to the Elite.
Yeah, I agree. That's great.
And I'm like, I would love that, actually. I'm like, that would make complete and utter sense. And I'm like, let's do that. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like there's apparently, I don't know, there's something between the Elite, like legitimately, because Cody is like too into the hokey, like 90, like early 90s, late 80s kind of style of wrestling, like all the extravagant pageantry, like all the things that people really necessarily didn't like about like 80s wrestling in the 90s, like, you know, like why people got sick of it in the like mid 90s. Is exactly what like the epitome of like Cody, what he thinks like good wrestling is in his favorite era. So they just don't met. He just doesn't mesh with like the Bucks and Kenny anymore. And apparently, I know this was like 6 months ago or so, but there was like a story that came out where they had legitimate like heat between each other, and they were not like, that's why Cody like hasn't done anything with the Elite or whatever, because they just decided to separately, you know, EVP their own storylines on their own side and not be involved with each other because they had like a falling out of some sort, apparently. So I don't know. Apparently they're okay now, though. Apparently I've heard recently that they make jokes about it on being the Elite and stuff. Like, it's fine. Like, they're good, but like, they're just doing their own separate things now.
It is what it is.
Yep.
But
and the Elite's got too many people right now anyway, I think. But
no, they definitely do.
Yeah.
you kind of need like the elite killers. Like you need Frankie Kazarian in there. You need Cody Rhodes. You need Hangman Adam Page. Like you need a, like you could use like a team of the elite, but making him like the elite killers and like going after the elite to kind of dismantle it.
Exactly.
That would be kind of a good storyline. And I'm sure they may have thought of it.
We'll just have to wait and see.
Honestly, you could throw in like Christian Cage and Bryan Danielson in there, and dude, you got a, you got an awesome five, you know, 5-on-5 right there. You know, but the match itself, though, going back to Malakai versus Cody, I did like the match itself. The match was great. I was really into it the whole time. The thing that I loved was that Cody did not go over Malakai Black on this one. We kind of felt that that was going to happen. We felt like Cody was going to be like, oh, okay, well, you beat me that time, so now I'm going to win and kind of bury you type of thing.
Yeah.
And pleasantly surprised that did not happen. Malakai uses the mist and then a roll up to get the win. I thought that was great. I loved it and want to see, like, are we going to finally get away from this? Or are they going to continue this feud a little bit more? I preferably would love for them to just break away from it.
I never, the storyline, I didn't really care for to begin with. Yeah, this match was good. It was actually probably a little better than I thought. It was really, I did like the ending. I thought it was cool. The use of the mist, like it came out of nowhere. I didn't think that that it was going to happen that way. And there were a couple times in the match where I thought Cody was definitely going to win. There was a one point where the crowd was like, oh, Cody won. The crowd was booing so hard. And then Malakai kicked out and they were like,
yeah. Honestly, what I think that they need to do, if they want to, and this is the way I actually kind of, because I do want them to break away from it, but I feel like having the mist and the roll-up win isn't the way to have a blow off. So I feel like that they need to do something. They need to
have another one.
Yes. I feel like that they do need to have another one, but here's what I think should happen. And you know me, I just like my fantasy booking, but I feel like that they should like have it where it's like Malakai attacks somebody else, like have him, you know, in a match. Yeah. I'm against Lee Johnson or whoever, you know?
Yeah.
And he wins and he's going after them. Cody comes out, he attacks Malakai, and then you just start seeing Cody pursuing Malakai. Yeah. And it gets to a point where it's like, all right, let's have this big blow off match. But then whoever Cody's going to feud with next needs to interfere, cause him to lose this match. So this way, when Malakai kicks his head off, Cody's pissed off at the other person and just like, I can accept I lost three times to Malakai Black. I'm not beating him. I'm breaking away. I'm going after the person who cost me the win.
I agree. I like where you're going. I have a slightly different scenario, basically almost the same thing, but I think he doesn't even need to have like some sort of match with somebody. I think where they're going possibly from the way that it's looking is I think all he needs to do is kick Arn Anderson's head off again, because it looked great the first time when he did it. So if he kicks Arn Anderson's head off again, I think Arn Anderson, Cody's actually going to be the one to turn heel on Arn Anderson, because Arn Anderson's going to get involved like he did this week. He's going to end up costing Cody the match by distracting him. And then Cody's going to end up like hitting him with like a crossroads or something, or just punching him in the face or something and turning heel that way. Because what's a easier way to turn heel than to beat up an old Arn Anderson who everyone loves, you know?
Yeah, so. But I don't see that as much to happen.
We'll see.
I think because here's the thing. And I like Cody Rhodes as a wrestler. I don't know him as a person or how he is as an EVP, but I kind of have a feeling like he's going to go from this feud and he's going to be going into another feud. He's not, unless he has like another project that he has to go work on. I don't see him taking the time away from the ring again just yet. He just got back. So he's going to go back into another feud. And that's why I was saying
season two of Go Big Show. So
he just finished that though.
Oh, he did finish that?
Yeah.
I thought that it was just starting.
No, they just finished taping it. That's why he was away.
Well, he also is doing his reality show with Brandi Rhodes, too. Is that done, too?
Yeah, that was already taped.
Oh, Jesus.
That was taped every time that he's away from the ring. So, Jesus,
was he even... What, yeah, but he had a kid, though, also in this amount of time, too. Right. You're telling me he taped two shows and had a kid?
Yeah.
At the same time?
You gotta figure, like, first off, like, for the reality show, they do that over, like, a course of time. Like, it's not, okay, here, we're gonna just cram, like, a whole bunch of weeks in. Like, the reality show is, like, hey, we're going to show backstage stuff of like what I'm doing at AEW and what life is like as parents and, you know, prepping and, you know, doing promo work for AEW. That's not nearly as much of a time constraint as it is for the Go Big show. That one takes up the
that
time.
One they and take, that's yeah, that one and they that's take why, like three episodes at a time or whatever.
Right. So when that stuff happens, that's when you're seeing Cody taking the time away from the ring. Yeah. Where he goes out on some sort of injury or something happens. And, you know, that's why he's written off the TV for like 4 or 5 weeks.
All right, let's move on from this because we still got NXT as well.
Yeah, I know. I'd so much rather just talk about AEW.
I know. But that, yeah, we still need a little time. To
CM Punk's promo. First off, it was definitely a little bit better than the promos that we've been seeing other than the first
last week. Yeah. And then the week before. Yeah. The first week of course was great. But
then he got a little too soft with his promos.
I like that. This one was a little bit harder hitting.
He was a little fired up.
Yeah. He had more of an attitude. He had more of like the angry CM Punk.
And that's what he even kind of alluded to. It's just like, you know, you guys all want the angry. He does. Cause he knows the podcast. He listens to like the different podcasts. I'm sure he listens to Busted Open. And Bully Ray flat out like wound up saying like what Punk's, you know, promos need to be like. And it's like, yeah, you need to be fired up. You need to, you know, show the angry CM Punk. And he made reference to that in his promo last night. And he was just like, you know, you guys want the angry CM Punk, especially on the microphone. He goes, be careful what you wish for. He goes, it's coming soon. He goes, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, just remember you asked for it.
Exactly. And I liked the promo. It's giving like a good build for the match at on Rampage.
It's a good tease to the heel kind of CM Punk, you know.
So I'm liking it. And I felt like this was actually the only option of something to follow up what I now want to talk about, which is the Bryan Danielson Kenny Omega match.
Which Jesus cannot believe that this opened. Obviously, match of the night.
Oh God, dude, match of like
Kenny Omega match is of like match of AEW. Kenny Omega's match of AEW, singles for sure, 100%. Because he, like people were saying, and I agree, this back to best bout machine, Kenny Omega, and also Bryan Danielson, his best match, like since he returned from his injury. I think this is Meltzer's gonna give this one like 6 stars, or 5.5, something like that.
He won't give it 6 stars just because it ended in a draw.
Oh yeah,
time limit draw.
Two of the Okada matches ended in a draw, and they were like 7.5 stars. So like,
I don't know, but to me that was the only thing that was disappointing because I'm like,
you broke the scale.
I'm just like, dude, this was such an awesome match. And then it's just like,
I thought,
and it just ends because of time limit.
I thought this was a good way to end it. And let me tell you why, because they know, okay, everybody complains about beating the champion, even if it's not for the championship. Everyone says, and they always give this critique on WWE, that if you beat the champion, like, what is that? Like in boxing or UFC, there's no such thing as a non-title match unless it's an exhibition of some kind, mm-hmm. which isn't even a real match. When you beat the champion, you become the champion. Even if it's overseas, even if it's, you know, in some rinky-dink hall, if it's sanctioned, you just win the title for being the champion. So I like the way in which, because obviously they're going to have another match, and I like in which the way that because it was Bryan's debut, he was winning the match and they put over, because I like that he was winning the match and he was going to win, it looked like, had the, like, Omega was about to tap out had, you know, the time limit not been up. So I feel like that it made Brian look good and protected Omega at the same time from being the champion. I thought that that was a good way to do it. I didn't think of it. I understand. Like, I said the same thing as you, where I thought that Brian should have won, you know, going into it.
It was more because I feel like Brian should have won just for the simple fact that it was his debut match.
Yes, I know. I get that. But
that was
it's not a loss or like a no contest, though. Like,
well, technically, yeah. It is a no contest. It's a draw.
Yeah, but a no contest is like a DQ. Like, it's like a little different.
Kind of, it's like interference. I mean, a no contest means that there's no winner regardless, but
yeah.
There's varying degrees of the no contest. There's double DQ, there's, you know, double count out, there's time limit draws, you know, so it's still a no contest, but it's a no contest due to a time limit draw. But
I'll let you talk about the match because I'm sure that probably had your mouth watering on this one.
I loved it. It was great. This match was amazing. The longest running V trigger. I mean, literally from like the top of the ramp all the way to the ring to hit the V trigger was awesome. Hitting the suplex on the plexiglass ramp.
Yeah.
The buckle bomb that sent Daniel Bryan over the top rope. The chops alone from Kenny Omega to Daniel Bryan just like ripped Daniel Bryan's chest open.
His chest, man. And Bryan Danielson, you keep getting me on that. So Bryan Danielson, not Daniel Bryan anymore. I know it's going to take a while for us. It's been
Bryan,
years. But...
Yeah, I mean, everything about this match was great. Bryan's kicks, just like really hard-hitting kicks.
Yeah.
And the first one I loved the most when they had the lockup. And it's just like you had them lock up at first. Kenny Omega hit that chop and Bryan Danielson just kind of like brushed it off. Like, okay, they lock up again. They go up against the ropes. You're thinking that Bryan is going to do the chop. And instead he does a chest kick to Kenny Omega. And it literally just knocks Kenny Omega off his feet. And I'm like, yes. I'm like, this is the Bryan Danielson that we need to see. We need that strong style, like high intensity caliber wrestler, and that's what he showed us last night.
And I'm glad, because you know I previously mentioned it also, this must have gotten, because you know I had previously mentioned on a previous podcast that JR tends to mess up a lot of stuff and gets a little salty at times and stuff, but I really enjoyed him tonight, and I feel like it's because he got so fired up by this match. Because he's really sort of coming into his own now. I feel like he's like realizing that he screws stuff up and he's getting kind of in the groove of things. And he's really like falling in love with wrestling again. Cause I feel like JR hasn't been in love with wrestling for over 20 years, you know? So,
well, the thing is, I mean, this was literally a fantasy booking come true. This is a match that everyone's wanted to see for so long. It never felt like it was ever going to happen because Kenny Omega wasn't going to WWE, and Daniel Bryan at the time was he wasn't going to leave WWE.
We thought he was a lifer. I thought so anyway. Right.
So, I mean, it was a match that no one thought was ever going to be possible, and it was now possible. And that's why, I mean, I guarantee you when the ratings come out, first off, I guarantee the ratings are going to be high for Dynamite. Yeah. I feel like if they look at just those first 30 minutes alone, maybe even that whole first hour, because I think that first hour was mostly Bryan Danielson versus Kenny Omega, and then the CM Punk promo. I think those two in combination took up the majority of that first hour.
You know, I think that was the point of it being the opening match we were talking about. Yeah, to bring in new viewers like that, be like, for people to call up their friends and be like, you got to watch this match. Turn on TNT right now.
That's the exact reason why they did it. Yep. But I guarantee you, like, your ratings for this are going to be extremely high.
Genius on their part.
It was. And for me, I like the... I also like the fact that I hate that it ended in a draw, but I liked it because the writer aspect of me, the author in me, because my moniker and my nickname in the writing world is the King of Cliffhangers. It felt like the cliffhanger for it, and it's just like, I need more.
Yeah,
and it's so the author in me and like the cliffhanger like aspect of my life, I'm just like, I'm craving more, and it's just like, I want to see what happens. Like, give me more, like I need it. And that's the mentality I have, and I like that they did that. But even I hate crowd, that they did it, because it's just like, I wanted a conclusion to this one.
Even the crowd kind of booed at first, but then they kind of understood like that, yeah, this needs to happen in order for it to kind of continue.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Make it believable both ways down the line, which is what's just so great about AEW and its fans, is that we're like 90% smart marks. And then some of the new fans that are coming in, some of the younger viewers and stuff like that. But like, it's great that that the crowd gives, especially like the New York crowd's usually good about that anyway, is really given, you know, the performers exactly what they need to
absolutely.
Yeah. To go out there and perform to the best of their ability.
All right, let's switch topics, because we spent a lot of time on AEW,
and yeah.
We still have to cover NXT,
yeah.
Unfortunately. So let's go into it.
It's first, right. There was a lot of squash matches and unknown people that we never heard of.
So. I was not impressed at all with NXT. Right from the get-go, you had a weird whole opener where it's just like a bunch of random guys in the ring.
Did you hear and the edict that NXT is supposed to be edgy?
Yeah,
that's what they want.
They're going to be edgier, and they're supposed to be a little bit sexier when it comes to like letting the women wear different things. And I'm just
that means they're saying, "Hey, dress skimpier, women, or you're fired." It's basically actually what it is, because I think the women would actually like that they're more covered up now when they wrestle. I feel like they like that they're not a piece of meat when they go out there, like Vince McMahon probably would like that they be. But
if Vince McMahon had it his way, they'd be back in bra and panties matches all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Pillow fight matches and whatever. You know, but also I just want to say about that. Yeah. It basically means, guys, that, they're going to dress in slightly skimpier clothing, the women, and everybody's going to curse and say bitch. And, you know, they're going to bleep out curses.
The perfect point is Bron Breakker. So first off, let me restart this whole thing, because off, you had all those people in the ring. Ciampa comes out and starts going on about like the new NXT and all this other BS.
Yeah, it's all the new guys, like some guys that debuted last week, some guys that we've never heard of, really. Yeah,
it was basically like Odyssey Jones and like a bunch of the guys that debuted last week, and Bron Breakker and everybody. Basically, like other guys keep coming out, all hell breaks loose because Pete Dunne what's his name? Ridge Holland attack. They get thrown out of the ring. It's a whole big mess. And then even the women backstage start getting into a brawl for no apparent reason.
Yeah, right.
That was supposed to be like their edgier version of this. And I'm just like, dude, what the hell were you thinking?
Yeah.
Then you get to, again, the edgier comment. Yep. Yeah. The edgier comment is Bron Breakker getting on the microphone, and him being like, he goes right into like seriously Scott Steiner mode, because he sounded just like him.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Like the voice was like, at points I was like, that's Scott Steiner right there.
Yeah. And he's just like, if you you two, you know, can grow a set, and I'm being gentle with the way that it's I'm saying it anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, basically he's just like, he goes right into like classic Scott Steiner. And I was just like, dude, I'm like, wait,
you
Scott
think
Steiner's
you can handle
on
the big bad booty daddy?
Yeah.
Then come down here. Basically, without saying that.
I was just kind of like, it sounded just like him. And for that, I was like, okay, he sounds like he could be a main eventer.
Yeah,
I
didn't think it was terrible for him being like brand new to the business. He's only been training for like a year or whatever it is. So,
but it was just one of those things where I was just like, okay, that got my attention.
Yeah,
the brawling between the men and then the women backstage, all that was just chaos for no reason, and it made absolutely no sense. Then we get into the Cruiserweight title match, Roderick Strong getting the win and becoming the new Cruiserweight champion by beating Kushida and literally needing 6-on-1 in order to do it.
Yeah, which I figured that was going to happen. Also, yeah, we're putting over, even though he's the heel faction, we're in the heel faction, we're putting over basically that Roderick Strong is supposed to be like the best, like pure wrestler kind of in NXT is kind of the way that they're pushing him. Like he's like a technical, you know, like MMA grappler type cult or whatever it is that they're in.
And I mean, honestly, it was a good match.
It falls flat. Like, I feel like the gimmick itself, like
the gimmick itself is horrible.
Yeah. Like who is like Roddy Strong? Like, I don't get it. Also like weird thing, like that could be alluding to maybe a breakup not too far down the line when Roddy finally realizes that these guys are a bunch of vultures, is that, you know, Malcolm Bivens holds the title after he wins it for a good, like, minute and a half. Like, Roddy doesn't even get to raise it. He takes it from him immediately and then holds it and, like, you know, looks at it himself like he just wanted himself. And then he shakes Roddy's hand and then Roddy has to, like, take it back from him to raise it. And I just thought that was kind of weird. I felt like he uncomfortably held the title for a long time without Roddy letting Roddy raise it. And yeah. I don't know. I feel like that's part of storyline in some way, shape, or form.
I don't know. In my opinion, I think that they needed to be more of like, they needed to be more of Diamond Mine eventually turning on Roderick Strong and making it where it's just like,
That's gonna happen. That's like maybe the way that it's looking. Like he might lose the Cruiserweight title and then they just beat him up. And
well, no, I don't feel like he needs to lose the Cruiserweight championship, but I feel like
I mean, down the line, not like now. Have a reign for a while. I
get it, but what my point is they first should have made it where him coming in and he needed to treat it like Adam Cole did with the Undisputed Era. Be Adam Cole, but kind of have like adopting that mentality, have a conversation with like, they should have had it where it was like Bivens and Roderick Strong having a conversation. And it was just like, you know, even after like the initial debut of Diamond Mind,
they just,
and be like, this is what we need to do. We need to get like a group of guys that we can go and just dominate things. Like they need to show that conversation. And then it's just like, you start seeing them build by bringing in like a person here, a person there. Yeah. That would have been great. And then you have it where it's just like, okay, this is designed now for me to be protected as champion. This is the way I'm going to win and keep the title. Like that's what they need to do. And then the people in Diamond Mine be like, well, where's our title shots? You know, where are we getting out of it? And they them turn face by turning on Roderick Strong.
All right. Yeah. Now let's move on. I don't want to talk about Diamond Mine anymore. We don't have that much time.
No. We had Kaylee Ray getting a squash win over Amari Miller. We had Dante Chen getting
you just rattle off the squash match
because that's what it was.
Yeah, it literally is. Yeah.
You had Joe Gacy basically getting the Elias entrance where it's just like, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Gacy. And it was just like a ridiculous promo that leads
like
supposed
to be like John Wayne Gacy. I feel like that is like, but in 2021, because he comes out and he does this promo about he wants to put everybody in a safe space, which is like the new thing in colleges or whatever, when, you know, you feel threatened or something like that, you can go to a safe space or whatever. But I feel like in the way where he's like hugging, like he has a match with Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes wins, and then he tries to give him a handshake, and he's like, Cameron Grimes is like, no, get away from me, you weirdo. And he like hugs him. I feel like he's like uncomfortably happy and weird, where he's sort of like not like a Dexter Loomis kind of serial killer, but like in the way where he's like trying to be like this charming, smiley guy, but he's really like crazy.
Well, I'm waiting for him to go back into like the whole Chainsaw Joe Gacy gimmick that he used to be, you know.
That's what I'm saying. Like I feel like this is gonna be like something where he's like that, and then you're gonna see little cracks where he snaps here and there eventually, and then where he turns into, you know, kind of a totally different character eventually. But I like the seeds of it. It wasn't bad. It wasn't like it was better than I thought. Like, I wasn't interested in him at all before.
I wasn't interested at the whole segment. Then, and that's where I'm just kind of leaving it.
Go ahead.
You had Electra Lopez getting a squash match victory and then her calling out B-Fab. Yep. So you had B-Fab and Electra getting into it, furthering this whole Hit Row Legado feud.
That's now only about the women. So who really cares? Like, not because they're the women, but I mean these women. Okay, so Electra Lopez is new to Legado del Fantasma. And then you got, you know, Hit Row, which, to be fair, we didn't even know that B-Fab could even wrestle until like last week. So, you know, it's funny that, you know, Santos Escobar and Swerve himself have now become the background mm-hmm. characters to this feud. But yeah, we can move on.
Pretty much. You had Frankie Monet they announced she's finally going to get her title shot.
Didn't she get one already?
No, she hasn't. No, she was supposed to face her. She was supposed to face her last week.
Oh, okay.
So two weeks ago, they announced the following week it was going to be Frankie Monet versus Raquel Gonzalez. They scrapped that for the opening of NXT 2.0. It was now being pushed. Now we're in week two of NXT 2.0. And now they're like, oh, well, she's going to get her title match next week. First off, here's my gripe. First off, you already told her that she was getting the title match. And for no reason, no explanation, it was not on the mat, like on the card. It was pushed out. Now you're telling her she's got her title match again, but now it's next week. So you've pushed this match out for basically 3 weeks with no reasoning behind it. Which, again, WWE, we know. They make no sense ever. Then you run into this whole aspect of Frankie Monet has only wrestled two matches.
Yeah.
No, three matches. Sorry. She's wrestled three matches, and one of them was a loss. Oh,
yeah.
And I'm sitting here going, why exactly does she get a title match?
I mean, she should, but it's WWE, and the amount of matches you have doesn't matter to them. You can just come in and have a title match on your first night. You know, example, Von Wagner into the title match last week. You know, like, that's just the way that they do it. They don't care. We're expecting too much of them, Andrew. We are acting like it's AEW, and it's not.
Because here's the whole thing, is that NXT made more sense before this whole NXT 2.0.
Well, of course, because this is like WWE Lite. It's Raw and SmackDown Lite.
I know. I get it. But even before that, they were like, even before it became the, you know, WWE Lite, that, like, those final couple weeks of NXT, they were already kind of getting into that mode, because, again, they were already booking this match prior to NXT 2.0.
Yeah, well, and they were starting to make some changes early, like, along with the cuts and everything.
It just doesn't make sense.
That. Yeah, I know.
It just makes absolute no sense. And I know. It's WWE Lite. It's Vince McMahon.
Yeah, it's Vince McMahon, Bruce Pritchard storytelling. That's what
basically. It's frustrating and it's annoying, because it's just like, it makes absolute no sense.
Yep.
And it's deterring me. Like, I'm already getting turned off by this whole new NXT, where I'm just like, I chalk it up to, it's getting closer and closer to being like how I am with Raw and SmackDown, where it's just like, I don't care, and I'm gonna end up fast forwarding through most of it.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame, but yeah, I agree.
The next thing was the whole toxic attraction promo, then leading into Io Shirai and Zoe Stark basically just giving Gigi Dolin,
get off my TV.
Well, not even that, but they're giving the toxic attraction Gigi Dolin and JC Jane the title match for next week.
Yeah, but their whole promo was, I don't like her. You don't like her. I don't like her. Japanese. No. Why are we going to face her? What?
Yeah,
there was like two
no
words
sense.
A piece between them. that they just kept repeating over and over again. And I was like, who are they? Why are they still our NXT tag team champions? Like, I can't wait. I hope that Toxic Attraction wins, even though
I do
like,
too.
Yeah, like even though their promo wasn't necessarily the best or whatever, but
it wasn't a great promo.
Especially for them being new, like especially right. for like everyone outside of Mandy Rose's was okay. But you know, they Gigi Dolan and JC Jane are new, so
but
they're, you
know. But the thing is that they make it where it's you want to know more about them.
Yeah,
even
yeah,
though it's not a great promo, you wanted to know more about Toxic Attraction. You wanted to know about Gigi and JC. Yeah. So there's potential, like you said, there's potential there.
Yep.
And that's what I like about them. And I would like to see them take the titles. Honestly, I think
it's
Casey
so much
Cant-
more interesting than-
I honestly think Caden and Casey Cantazaro should have taken the titles from them when they challenged
they
a couple weeks ago.
With them but- next now. They can feud
no,
with
but
them next now.
I feel like they should have taken the titles from EO and Zoe and then made it more of a credible build when it comes to those two versus Toxic Attraction, because literally you just had Toxic Attraction taking on Casey and Caden last week, so it would have made more sense.
Yeah, also, yeah, like, and like I said, Zoe Starks and you know, Io Shirai have go away heat with me and a lot of other people right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally we had Bron Breakker and Tommaso Ciampa getting the win over Pete Dunne and Ridge Holland. Kyle O'Reilly making his return after just basically last week he got taken out backstage. Yeah.
The match was good itself. I thought
the match
was
good, and then Bron Breakker being the one who gets the pin.
I also thought that was good. What I didn't like is that Bron Breakker had to get the hot tag in the match, so Ciampa got beat up for a good portion of this match and isolated, which I didn't like for your new NXT champion in a match against somebody who one of which he beat last week for the title. You know, like, I don't think that...
It's all designed to go ahead and make Bron Breakker the new star.
Yeah, because that's their number one guy. They looked at all the Performance Center guys and they were like, that guy's the guy. They were like, Scott, you know, Rick Steiner's kid. That's the guy. We're going with him. So which I'm okay to see where he goes. I know it's new and whatever, but like I don't have faith or anything, but like I have interest and I think he has potential. I think he's still young and green, but he has potential, but I feel like they're strapping the rocket to him. So we might as well get used to it.
Yep. Because he's a big muscular guy.
And yep, what do and I always he's say? A legacy. He's a second generation, you know, superstar and they love their generational guys.
Well, they always love their generational guys, but what do I always say about Vince McMahon?
Yeah,
he's got a big heart. He's got a heart on for big muscular guys.
Yep, that's his favorite. So
that ends NXT. Thank God. Because again, WWE light and it's getting crappier and crappier every week.
Yep.
And it showed because their ratings, I mean, it didn't plummet, but it dropped a considerable amount compared to last week.
And I'm glad that, you know, people are letting them know how they feel by not actually watching the show, because that's how you tell WWE how you really feel, is by turning off the television and refusing to watch it. You can hear about it from me and Andrew instead. We'll watch it for you. We'll be one of the thousand like people that have to do this for a living and do this, and we will sit there and watch it for you so you don't have to.
We do this for a living?
Oh, I mean, not really a living, but like, you know,
I was gonna say, when did you start getting paid for it, man?
Yeah.
Be like, where's my money?
I just mean we treat it like a job anyway. So, you know. But all right.
It's the volunteer work where basically
we're doing
it's just
community
like,
service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're doing the wrestling community a service by sitting here and watching horrible wrestling fight made by WWE and reporting on it, so you don't have to watch it.
Yeah, we're wasting like 6-7 hours of our, you know, lives every week, you know, just for you. That's a community service, and I dare someone to tell me it's not.
All right, guys, that ends the show for today. We'll be back next week with our usual lineup. with Survivor Series recaps. We're going to be having Raw and SmackDown Day.
Did you
We're
know that
the pay-per-views this week?
Yeah.
Extreme Rules.
Yeah, Extreme Rules. I said Elimination Chamber, Extreme Rules, yeah.
Yep. We got Extreme Rules, so that's going to be tacked on to our Monday show.
Yep.
We're going to be doing AEW Rampage, and I guess the recap of Extreme Rules Monday. We'll be doing Raw and SmackDown Tuesday, Survivor Series Wednesday.
Yep.
We'll be doing AEW NXT Thursday, and then Thankful for the weekend.
Yes. Yes. Nice our long normal, weekend.
Our normal lineup. Yep. So, we'll get to it, and we will see you all next week. For now, I'm author Andrew Hess.
And I'm Justin DeFrancisco. So join us next week and find out what's on tap.